every year we pick a different Haggadah to try to learn through. This year the Haggadah that I chose was the Haggadah Shel Pesach Hashir V'Hashevach, Rav Zalman Sorotzkin's Haggadah Shel Pesach. This morning I gave a shir in yeshiva also on Hashir V'Hashevach, so since I recorded and that one's online, I'm going to do entirely different Divrei Torah than I did in that shir. So all Haggadah Divrei Torah, Alicia? All Haggadah Divrei Torah, and all from this Hashir V'Hashevach of Rav Zalman Sorotzkin, but all new ones, nothing that I have said before as far as I know. Rav Zalman Sorotzkin, for those who don't know, was born in 1881. He was a Rav in Europe. He was a son-in-law of Rav Lazer Gordon, the Telzer Rosh Yeshiva. He himself was a Rav in several towns in Europe, and he became very close in Europe with Rav Chaim Eiser because he was a Rav right near Vilna. He became very close with the Chavetz Chaim. He became very close with the Chazon Ish, and then he became the rabbi in Lutsk in 1930, and he stayed there until the Second World War. So he was known as the Lutzker Rav, and he managed to escape right before the war, and he made it to Eretz Yisrael. He was part of the Moetzes Gedolei HaTorah. He was the founding chairman of Chinuch Atzmai, I believe, and he wrote phenomenal Svarim on Chumash called Aznayim LaTorah. He wrote a Sefer, similar name, Moznayim LaTorah, on Yom Tovim. He wrote Shalos and Chuvos, Moznayim LaMishpat. He wrote a Sefer HaDeah VaDibur of Drashos, and on all the lists of his Sfarim, for some reason, no one ever lists Hashir V'Hashevach, which is his Haggadah, and it's really a phenomenal Haggadah. It's an outstanding Haggadah. He had five sons, all of whom became Rabbanim and leaders in communities and in yeshivas, the Telzers. There's still Sorotzkins in Telz in Cleveland, I believe, and in Telstone, obviously, and Eretz Yisrael and Petach Tikva, and all over the place, and running Chinuch Atzmai. So he left quite a legacy as well. So generally speaking, what I try to do when I go through, since I go through a Haggadah each year rather than just picking from a number of different sources, I try to find like what theme this author wanted to take out of the Seder night. I didn't really find much in terms of thematic ideas that go through, that run through the whole Haggadah, except for two things. One is something that pretty much anyone who ever wrote a commentary on the Haggadah has, and that is the theme that there was a double Shibud and a double Geula on the night of the Seder, that there was a Shibud HaNefesh and a Shibud HaGuf. That not only were we slaves in a physical way, we were slaves in a religious way, in a spiritual way, and therefore when we celebrate the Geula, we're celebrating a Geula HaGuf and a Geula HaNefesh. We're celebrating both elements. The other theme, I would say, that runs through much of what he says in the Haggadah is the theme of anti-Semitism, and it's the theme of someone, of what you would imagine someone who is writing commentary on the Haggadah, which tells us so much about how our enemies treated us, and someone who in his own life saw the Holocaust. He saw what happened in his own life, saw the communities that he was Rav in, that he grew up in, go up in flames, and he saw that in his own lifetime, and a lot of that really comes throughout his commentary on the Haggadah. So we're going to go through just a random Divrei Torah that he has. We're going to go in order of the Haggadah, and some a little longer, some a little shorter, so we'll mix it up a little bit. We'll start with Kehalach Ma'anya, or Halach Ma'anya, because that's how the Seder starts. And there's a double Lashon at the beginning of Halach Ma'anya. The whole thing is written in double Lashon. If you look in the Haggadah, it says, Halach Ma'anya, Diachlav, son of Barad, Mitzrayim, Kol Dichvin, Yesev Yechol. Kol Ditzrich, Yesev Yivsach. So that right there is a double Lashon. Hashata Hachal, Lashana Ba'barad Yisrael. Hashata Avdi, Lashana Ba'bnei Chorin. Again, another double Lashon. So the question number one is why the double Lashon of Kol Dichvin, Kol Ditzrich, Hashata Hacha, Hashata Avdi? Why do we have the double Lashon? So he suggests, again, the theme I just mentioned, that there are two types of Anius. There are two types of poverty that we suffered through. There's Anius Bida'as and Anius Kimashma'o. There is the simple poverty, and then there is the Anius Bidas, the fact that we were Ovdei Avodah Zarah. And he says that's the machlokas that you have in the Gemara, Maseches Pesachim, when it talks about how we have to be Maschil Begnus. So it says, how do we do that? So there's machlokas Rav and Shmuel. Either we're Maschil Begnus, we start with the negative by saying Avadim Hayinu, or by saying Mitchila Ovdei Avodah Zarah Hayu Avoseinu. Because Avad Mayinu refers to our physical bondage, and Mitchila Ovdei Avodah Zarah Hayu Avoseinu refers to the Anius Hadas. It refers to our spiritual bondage. So on the night of the Seder, we're celebrating the fact that we were no longer poor, Yatzu b'rechush gadol, we left with great wealth that we were able to take from the Egyptians, and we had this tremendous inspiration. The nisim and the neflaos that we were able to see on our way out inspired us greatly, so we left with a tremendous sense of emuna. So he says, now, looking back, commemorating the events of Yetzias Mitzrayim, we find ourselves very often throughout Jewish history, again, in times of galus. And we have to address both situations, both problems of galus. The problem of anius kimashma'o, just being poor, poverty, and suffering, and the problem of anius bedas. So we start with kol dichvin. Kol dichvin is, if you're hungry, people are never starving, that there are people that need, there are people that are hungry. So we tell them, there's nothing to be embarrassed about. This is something that historically it's just been the fate of the Jewish people for time immemorial, that we've always had. We've always had people who Nebuch were in a difficult situation. So kol dichvin, anyone who's hungry can come and eat. And then when the geula comes, and we have people who are ashirim, but even after the geula comes, people may have ashirus, they may have wealth, but there's still going to be the remnants of what it did to us religiously, of what it did to our emuna. So to that we say kol ditzrich yesev yifsach. Anyone who needs a little bit of inspiration, yesev yifsach. Hear about a Korban Pesach. Hear about a Pesach Mitzrayim. Hear about what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did for us on that night of Pesach. So to those who are hungry, we say then the second double lashon, to those who are hungry and who are starving, Hashata Hachal Hashanah Haba Ba'aradi Yisrael. Don't worry, right now in Galus we may be suffering, we may be struggling, and it's hard for us to relate to this because in America this struggling is not quite the way it's been for the Jewish people historically, but we should appreciate that historically we're experiencing unprecedented historical success in terms of Jews in Galus, the material success that we have in America. But we say to all the Jews in Galus throughout all the years who are struggling, don't worry, the Shana Babar of Yisrael, and it's true, after Mashiach comes, Lo Yechta Lev Yon Mikeref Haaretz, there are still going to be poor people in the world. But that doesn't mean that there are going to be a lot of them. It just means that there will still be people who are very wealthy and people who are less wealthy and people, but poverty is not going to be a major issue for us once we have Mashiach. So Lashana Baba Aradi Yisrael. You should know that if you're struggling financially, if you're struggling physically, Lashana Baba Aradi Yisrael. And then we say to those who are struggling emotionally, spiritually, religiously, Hashata Avdi Lashana Abba B'nei Chorin. Right now we are Avadim, but we're going to be B'nei Chorin. The Gemara says, that what does it mean? Charus al Luchos. We say that there was engraved on the Luchos, the Asaras Hadibros, Al Tikri Charus, Elecherus. Ben Chorin means that someone who's Osek Betorah is a Ben Chorin, so that everyone could become inspired by Torah. And we tell people that no matter what sort of emuna issues we may have, we should know that ultimately we're going to be inspired by Torah. That's his view. That's one of his views. He has like five different pshatim. That's one of his interpretations of Halach Ma'anya. Moving forward in the Seder, we then begin the question-answer portion of the Seder, where the Kana ben Shoel, we have Manishtana. So the first of the Manishtana is Shebechol Leilos Anu Ochlin Chametz Matzah, Halayla Zeh Kulo Matzah. So he says it's a little bit of a strange question to ask right after Halach Ma'anya. Never thought of the juxtaposition of the two. Because essentially, Halach Ma'anya just answered that question. You know, the kid's asking, why are we eating matzah? Hello, weren't you there like a minute ago? We just said, Halach Ma'anya, Diach Lava Son of Barad Mitzrayim, that this is the bread of affliction that our forefathers ate in Mitzrayim. So the truth is that Manishtana made it into the Agada before Halach Ma'anya made it into the Agada. That's the real answer, that Halach Ma'anya is a later addition. And the greatest raya is that it's not in Hebrew, so it was obviously added in times of Galus. But the way we say it, we have Halach Ma'anya followed by Manishtana, and we're asking right away what the matzah is all about. So he says it could be that Halach Ma'anya doesn't really answer why we eat matzah. What it answers is why we eat broken matzah. That we, right after Yachatz, we break the matzah. So Halach Ma'anya addresses Ma Darko Shalani Beprusa, just like a poor person eats a broken piece of bread. So we're eating broken matzah. That's what Halach Ma'anya addresses. But the Manishtana is asking, why do we only eat matzah? Why don't we have broken pieces of chametz? Poor people eat broken pieces of bread, not just broken pieces of matzah. Why don't we eat chametz as well? That's one possibility. The other possibility you suggest as to why we're asking about matzah is that we're not asking why we eat matzah, we're asking why we eat kulo matzah, because the child knows what the theme of the night is. He knows that it's a yantif. He knows that we're not just going to be talking about avdus and slavery and persecution and babies being killed and all these awful, horrendous things that went on. He knows the point of the story. The point of the story is that we then experienced geula. We then got out and everything was good. So the child is asking, why is it kulo matzah? Why? You just told me about lechem oni. You just told me about lachma anya. Well, why are we having only lachma anya? If you really want to tell the whole story, have some lechem oni, and then have delicious cake and bread and chametz that represents ashirus. And the answer that we give the child is that, no, within the lechem oni itself, within the matzah itself, there's a dual message. Matzah is not only lechem oni, it's also matzah zu shanu ochlim, we're going to say when we finally answer his question a couple of hours later in the Seder, when we finally answer what the matzah is all about, matzah zu al shema, we're going to tell him it's not only because it was lechem oni, but shlo hispik mitzekem shlo avasein alahachmit. It's because the rush of geula was such a rushed environment. We had to get out so quickly that our dough didn't have a chance to rise. So that same lechem, that same matzah that you view and that we just said is a lechem oni, is also a symbol of geula. You know, the three mitzvot halayla, Pesach, Matzah, and Maror, Karm Pesach is very clearly a symbol of geula. Maror is very clearly a symbol of bitterness. Matzah is the one that's in between. Not in between, it's both. It comprises both elements of geula and galus. So that's how he understands the question of the Manishtana, that it's kulo matzah. Moving along, we then answer Avadim Ayinu L'Paro B'Mitzrayim. So a lot is made by many of the commentaries of the Haggadah. Obviously, pharaohs are rulers in Egypt. Why do we have to say L'Paro B'Mitzrayim? What's the idea of Paro B'Mitzrayim? And this he emphasizes, just a quick vart, he says, that from the days of Yosef and on, all of the Egyptians were Avadim to Paro. No one was a free man, because Yosef was the one that figured out a system whereby they could move everyone around. Everyone had to give up their land just to have sustenance, just to be able to have food. Yosef worked out a system where everyone became a slave to Paro. Now, given that, who are we slaves to? We weren't just slaves to Paro, we were slaves to Paro b'Mitzrayim, which means that we were avadim la'avadim. The people who are our taskmasters, the people who we had to answer to, weren't even free men themselves. They themselves were avadim. And we're trying to emphasize the maskil b'gnos of avadim ayinu l'paro b'Mitzrayim. It's not stam that we were slaves. We weren't even slaves. We were the slaves of the slaves. And especially when you think about who are these people, these are from the B'nai Cham. Noach, Avi Aviv, was mekalel him, that his children should be Eved Avadim, that these are the lowest form of slaves. And we were slaves to them. And that's part of what we emphasized on the night of the Seder, was not just that we were having a difficult time with life. It's one thing if you have, let's say, an overbearing boss. But, you know, your boss is a genius, he's a great businessman, he knows what he's doing, he's accomplished, he's, you know, someone that you could look up to for his accomplishments, and he's just really hard, he's just making your work really hard. But it's an entirely different thing when you feel like you're 10 times smarter than him, you could do so much better than he is, and you're a much more classy person, you're a much more knowledgeable person than he is, and he's the one that's sitting there telling you what to do, and when you know better, and that's demeaning. So we're describing how demeaning it was for us to be Avadim Mitzrayim, when we say Avadim Ayinu L'Paro B'Mitzrayim. Now Gadda continues, in that same paragraph we say, and if HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't take us out of Mitzrayim, Erei Anu Uvnei Vanenu Meshubadim Ayinu L'Paro B'Mitzrayim, we would all be Meshubadim to Paro Mitzrayim, and therefore, even if we're all Chachamim, Nevonim, Zekeinim, Yodim Es HaTorah, we have a mitzvah L'Saper B'Yitzias Mitzrayim, we would still have a mitzvah to tell about Yitzias Mitzrayim. So Zalman Stratzkin points out that he doesn't quote this from Reb Chaim, but Reb Chaim famously pointed out the difference between the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim versus the mitzvah of Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim. One of the fundamental differences is that Sipur means to go through all of the details, not just to mention it quickly, to go through all of the details. But another one of the differences is that Sipur is only B'Sha'a Sheish Matzah U'Marer Munachim L'Fanecha. The mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is only when you have matzah and maror in front of you. The Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim, you don't need any props. You just mention Yetzias Mitzrayim. You don't need anything in front of you. He says, based on that, those differences between Sipur and Zechira, we can understand very well Akasha that a lot of the commentaries on the Haggadah ask. In the next story that the Haggadah is going to tell of the various Tanayim who were staying up all night, the Maisa with Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Shor, Rabbi Lazar ben Azari, Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Tarfon, who were in Bnei Brak, staying up all night. And then the Talmidim came and they said, Higiyazman Kriya Shema Shel Shachris, it came time for Kriya Shema. So some of the commentaries on the Haggadah ask, so what, it's time for Kriya Shema? They're Osik B'mitzvah. Halacha is, Osik B'mitzvah, Pater Min HaMitzvah. If you're still doing a mitzvah, you're Pater from a mitzvah. So why do they care about Zman Kriya Shema? They're Osik B'mitzvah right now. They don't have to stop the mitzvah that they're doing. So he says, if you understand the difference between Sipur and Zechira, you understand that it's not a kasha at all. Because Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is only B'shah She'esh Matzah U'mar Munachim L'fanecha. It's only so long as we have a mitzvah of having matzah and marar, which means it only goes through the night. Once you're at the next morning, the mitzvah of matzah and marar aren't there anymore. Memela, the mitzvah of Sipur, isn't there anymore. So it's not like you're telling someone who's in the middle of shaking lulav on Sukkot, oh wait, no, it's time, you gotta go say Kriya Shema. I'm all sick of mitzvah, leave me alone with Kriya Shema. No, it's like you go over to someone who's shaking lulav the day after Sukkot, and you tell him, listen, it's time for Kriya Shema, Sukkot is over, let's put it away already. So that's what was going on. The Zman was already over. So that's how he answers that question, based on an understanding of the mitzvah of Sipur. I did mention this morning when I spoke to my Talmidim that he points out that on the story with Rav Loz ben Azariah and all the Tanayim, where were these Talmidim the whole night? Why did they just show up in the morning? So he says, very passionate. He says, because the Talmidim, why weren't the Talmidim with their Rebbeim on the night of the Seder? He says, because you're not supposed to be with your Rebbeim on the night of the Seder. You're supposed to be with your family on the night of the Seder. So I gave my Talmidim a little chizuk. Sometimes they feel bad. They're out of Eretz Yisrael and they're coming home. I'd rather be Baruch Nevin Sal Seder. I'd rather be better. That's not where you're supposed to be. You're supposed to be by your parent, by your family on the night of the Seder. That's where you belong. And the mitzvah is v'gad to levincha. That's the mitzvah. You're supposed to be together with your family. It should go without saying on the night of the Seder. Then we move on to Keneged Arba Banim Dibra Torah. That the Torah speaks to Arba Banim, that there are four. Now, where did they come up with this number four? That there are only four types of people on earth? I could think of many more types of people, or if you want to categorize more generally, fewer types of people, good people and bad people and power of people. I don't know, three. Well, why four? Because there are four places in the Torah where the Torah actually says, your children are going to ask you, and here's what you say. So since there are four separate parshios in the Torah that discuss that, so he said, must be that the Torah, the Baal HaGadah is telling us, it must be that we're talking about Arba Abanim, that there are four types of people. However, Rav Zalman Sratzkin points out, everyone talks about all four sons, even if all of the people around your table fit into one category. I happen to have four sons, but I'd like to think that they don't split along the lines of Echad Chacham, Echad Rosh, Echad Tam, Echad Sheni, Yodei Elishol. Some of them do, but they shouldn't all fit into those categories. Let's say you look around your table and you see a table full of chachamim, or a table full of rishonim, or a table full of tamim, or enim yodim lishol. So he says, the halacha still is that a father has to address all of them. Why? He has to address the types of answers we would give to each of them. Kedei sheyishma'u eich sarach ben chacham lishol. We have to set a model. This is how a ben chacham asks a question. Listen to what a Ben Chacham asks. The child may right now be a Tam. He's not holding up being a Chacham yet. But how do we train him to be a Chacham? How do we teach him to be a Chacham? We model the behavior. We say, listen, this is what a Chacham does. A lot of times you say, be a good boy. I don't know what that means. What am I supposed to do to be a good boy? So we tell him, this is how a Chacham asks. And if we stop doing bad things, well, what's bad? This is what a Rasha does. This is how a Rasha speaks. And even if there are no Rishayim, and this is how we respond to a Rasha, in case you ever encounter one in your life, and you need to know how to respond, this is how we respond to him. And it's not even that if the Rasha's in front of you, he says, you don't even tell the Rasha, you don't even knock out the Rasha's teeth at the Seder. You tell the Rasha that, by the way we ultimately respond to you is we're going to knock out your teeth. Meaning the way we ultimately respond to you is it's not that this is what we're doing at the Seder, this is what we're describing at the Seder, no matter who we are. Then he goes on to suggest a fascinating ha'ara, really ha'ara nifla'a, that I never noticed before. He points out that some of the commentators in the Haggadah point this out, but he develops it a little bit. He points out that, as we mentioned before, there are four places in the Torah where the Torah tells you what to tell your children. By the Tam and by the Eni Yodei Lishal, what the Haggadah tells us to tell our children is exactly what the Torah tells us to tell our children. By the time it's v'amarte lav b'chozik yad etzion Hashem Mitzrayim, by the enyo de'alishol v'igadu l'vincha b'yom v'leymar b'avur za'as Hashem l'vitzayim Mitzrayim. Exactly what the Torah says to tell those particular children. But by the Chacham and by the Rasha, the answers that we give in the Haggadah are not the answers that are given in the Torah. The Torah says by the Chacham in Parshas V'eschanan that the answer is avadim hayinu. It's not Chukas HaPesach and, you know, Ein Maftirin Achar Pesach HaFikom. No, it's Avadim Hayinu. And by the Rasha, the answer is Zevach Pesach Hula Hashem. Asher Pasach Al-Batei B'nei Yisrael B'Mitzrayim. We tell them about Karm Pesach. That's the answer to the Rasha. And it's not Hakeh Shinav and Leave Lo. And no, it's we just teach them. That's the answer to the Rasha in the Torah. So what's going on over here? Why by the time they knew this? So the Kasha is not on the time of the Elishal. That we get. That we're doing exactly what the Torah says. But why the Chacham and the Rasha do we give different answers? So he suggests the following approaches for each. We could divide it as two Devei Torah. One in terms of the Chacham. Why in the, do we give the Chacham a different answer? So he says, you'll notice all three other children that are dealt with are all dealt with in the same Parsha in the Torah. They're all dealt with in Parsha's bow. It's only the Chacham who's dealt with in Parshas Ve'eschanan. Now, where would you expect for the Torah to tell us that we should teach our children about Yetzias Mitzrayim? In the Parshias about Yetzias Mitzrayim. You'd expect Ve'era, Bo, B'Shalach. That's where it belongs. Why is the Chacham in Parshas Ve'eschanan? So he points out probably, if you look, what's the context? What's the major, what comes up in Parshas Ve'eschanan? Well, we have Asaras Dibros, and we have Shema. Like, it's a pretty big Parsha. There's some very important things in Parshas Ve'eschanan, and very global things. Things that are about Torah in general. So he suggests that maybe when the Torah talks about Ki Yishalcha Bincha Machar, about the Chacham, the Torah is not telling us that the Chacham is asking about the night of the Seder in particular. The Torah is telling us about a Chacham who asks about everything. Maha Edus Fachukim, Matzah, Sukkah, Pesach, Shabbos, Tefillin, Mezuzah. He wants to know it all. And the answer to the Chacham that the Torah says is we tell him about everything. We tell him my edus that Hashem commanded us, and if his question, the Sforno says that the question the Chacham asks of my edus is really, why don't we just have the Shabbat Mitzvah Bnei Noach? Why do we need more than that? So the answer that it says, even though it starts with Avadim Hayinu, that's just where it starts. But it then continues into everything else also. We tell him about everything. But on the night of the Seder, it's not time to tell him about everything. On the night of the Seder, we need to condense it a little more, because on the night of the Seder, we need to teach him about Hilchas Pesach. We need to teach him about what we're doing. And we go through every detail with the Chacham. We go through the entire Maseches Pesachim, starting with Arla Arba Asar, until Ein Maftirin Achar Pesach Afikomen, which happens to be the last Mishnah in Maseches Pesachim. So it's not about the halach of Ein Maftirin Achar Pesach Afikomen in particular. We're saying we go through all of Inyanei Pesach, concluding with Ein Maftirin Achar Pesach Afikomen. So that's in terms of the Chacham. What about the Rasha? So he says when it comes to the Rasha, the Torah tells us that the Rasha is going to ask a certain question. But you understand that there could be different motivations for a person to be a Rasha. Sometimes you have Kasher Anu Yoshim Al Maseinu. We're living in Eretz Yisrael and everything is going well for us. And you can understand that the question of Ma Avoda Azos Lachem by the Korban Pesach, maybe what he's asking is, you know, Lamali Rov Zidchechem, that Hashem is saying, why do we need all these Karbanos? And maybe he's saying that why should we, if we're experiencing success and we're in Eretz Yisrael, why should we still be talking about the Avdus? Isn't it beneath us to still talk about the Avdus? So such a question you could answer. Such a question you could work with such a Rasha. A Rasha who, in a time where we have Geula, in a time where we have Eretz Yisrael, you have a Beis HaMikdash, and he's saying, why do we have to still talk about Mitzrayim? We're here, we're in the Promised Land. You know, it's over already. This doesn't relate to us anymore. So then you could start teaching him, and that's what the Torah is addressing. But in the Haggadah is the Haggadah for Galus. It's a Rasha who sees what Klal Yisrael is going through in Galus. And when a Rasha asks, what do we need all of these laws for, when there is no other sense of Jewish identity other than the Torah, so what he's really saying is, I don't want any piece of the Jewish religion. See, if a person is in Eretz Yisrael and there is a Beis HaMikdash, and he's saying, I don't understand these laws based on what happened long ago. We have Eretz Yisrael, we have a Beis HaMikdash, we have these things. So you could, he's wrong, because we do need those laws and we do need the history and we have to teach him about that, but we could talk to him. And that's what the Torah was addressing. The Haggadah is addressing the Russia in Galus, where all we have, Ein lanu shir rak haTorah zos, all we have is the Torah. That's all we've got left. And he's going to say, what do we need the Torah for? Well, then what he's saying is, I don't want any piece of being part of Eretz Yisrael, of being part of the Klal Yisrael. And that we can't respond to. So there's no answers. It's Lahakos Hashinav, there's no answers. Now, on Lahakos Hashinav, he also mentions another idea that I saw it somewhere here. He mentions another idea that Lahakos Hashinav, he says, maybe is that the Rasha is motivated. Yeah, he says the Rasha is motivated by taivos, like Rabbi Kladen writes in Kovitz Ma'amarim, that why do people want to claim they have problems in Emunah? So sometimes people have problems in Emunah, most of the times it's not really that. Most of the times it's they would like to eat non-kosher food, they would like to not have to pay yeshiva tuitions, they would like to, I don't know, they would like all sorts of things. It's just life would be a lot easier for them, and they would like to do all sorts of averos, and they can't do those things because the Torah restricts them. So it's really their taivos that are talking. So he says, Hakei Hashinav means, he thinks he's judging, or Russia thinks he's judging our religion in an honest way, but he doesn't realize how much of a bribe the Yetzer Hara is giving him to judge it in a dishonest way. The Yetzer Hara is giving him everything. He's giving him all the non-kosher food and all the, you know, all the Taivos Olam Hazeh to be able to say, to come up with the justification that this religion is not for him. Hakei Hashinav means, take away his taiva, knock out his teeth, now he can't eat. Now he's not going to be able to eat that candy because he doesn't have teeth anymore. Now judge our religion. Now see, without the taivos, take all the taivos all the mazah away and just judge the religion for what it is. And then he'll be able to see the light. He'll be able to see. So it's not about Hakei Hashinav, you should get into a fight with him. It means take away the Yetzer Hara. If we're able to isolate the Yetzer Hara, then he writes, interestingly, he says, I, there are other taivos other than achila. Why do we only talk about the teeth? He says, we're talking about a child. And that's the way. How do you bribe children? You bribe children with candy. He says, "V'day lemevin." You know, older people have different yetzer haras. You got to deal with that separately. Just a quick point: the Rasha is maha avoda hazos lechem. He says, for the Rasha, it's an avoda in the negative connotation of avoda. It's an avoda gedolo kasha. But for us, it's an avoda hakodesh. It's a different kind of avoda. It's the kind of avoda that we feel privileged to do because it's the avoda from which we draw our emuna that carries us through the entire year. Then after the Dalet Banim, the Torah, the Haggadah says, Yachal Mirosh Chodesh, you might think to start doing this mitzvah Mirosh Chodesh, Tamalomer B'yomahu, that's why it says B'yomahu. Iba Yomahu, Yachal Mibod Yom. You might think that you start an Erev Pesach, no, that's Tamalomer B'avor Zeh. So we have all these phrases in the Pasuk tell me, don't do it early, no, not a few hours early, not a few weeks early, make sure you only do it. So Zalman Sarasin asks, V'yesh Lavin, ma kolach harada azos? What's the big deal? So what, if you tell the story a little early also, you know, you start talking about Yetzias Mitzrayim, you have a Haggadah on Tuesday night before Pesach, and you start talking about Yetzias Mitzrayim. What's the big deal? What's the terror over here? The Torah has to add words. Don't do it from Rosh Chodesh. Don't do it that morning. Better be careful. Well, what are we so worried about? So I was a little disappointed because in this piece he says, Ayin drush l'pesach b'tchilas ha-sefer. So you have to turn back to the beginning of the book, and he has a five-page mahalich to answer this. Essentially, the summary of the five-page mahalich is that throughout the rest of the year, we are living as Jews. And it's very easy for the Russia to say, look at all these antiquated minhagim that father has. You know, he puts on tefillin, he does this, that. It doesn't mean anything. And we're in such a rush the whole year, and we're doing so much, and we're working, and we're trying to support our families, and that we often don't have time to actually sit and explain what we're doing. Like, do the kids even know what's written in the parshiyos of the tefillin? We don't really have time to just sit and explain what we're doing. And it makes it very easy for a Russia, for someone who's not a thinking person, or for someone who, having other people be thinking people is his worst enemy, because once you start thinking too much, you're going to realize that there is value and there is meaning. So the rest of the year is a boon for him. No one has time to think anyway. So the Russia's got, you know, is able to push his agenda the whole year. But comes the night of the Seder, and we sit down, and there's nothing else to do, and we bring out all the props, and we start explaining, Rachel Bitcha Ketana, we start explaining slowly and carefully, Mitchilov De'avod Zarah Yavosenu, these are the Nisan that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did, and we spend all night, hours and hours, explaining carefully that there's meaning behind everything. You think it's just some lamb and some crackers and some bitter herbs? No, no. Pesach Zal Shema, Matzah Zal Shema, Marah Zal Shema. We explain what each one is about. And that's the ultimate enemy of the Rasha. So that's why Kala Charada. Because you start, if you start the Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim before you have the props and before you have the time to really do it right, then the Rasha is going to, a half-hearted explanation is the friend of the Rasha. The Rasha, the full explanation with everything is the friend of the Chacham. So the Torah goes out of its way to say, make sure you save it for the Seder so that you can know you do it properly. And he writes in that in his introduction to the Haggadah that part of that is that, you know, most of what we do in terms of teaching our children throughout the rest of the year, no matter what profession you're in, even if you're in Chinuch, most of what we do in terms of teaching our children Torah is really punted off to the yeshivas and to the rebbeim, and you know we do very little of actually teaching our children Torah. So one night a year, we become the rebbeim. We do what the Torah says, "Vigadta levincha," the mantem es b'neichem, that it's our mitzvah to teach our children in a meaningful way. So you imagine you're paying a lot of tuition, and you send your kid to yeshiva, and the teacher is totally unprepared every single day. The teacher just comes in and just didn't prepare a lesson, and was just, you know, doing it on the fly, whatever comes to mind. Be terribly disappointed. What are you paying the teacher? He's not doing his job then. Well, guess what? One night a year, we have the job to do ourselves. So we got to prepare for it. We have to look through the Haggadah in advance. We have to know what to expect. We have to know the story. We have to anticipate the questions. We have to think of ways to make it exciting. It's our job. Our wives work very, very hard to make everything else happen on Pesach. So our one job to take seriously, and very often our wives take this job very seriously, thank God also, but our job to take seriously is to think about how we're going to present it to the children in a meaningful and impactful way. And that's why it's Dafka, the night of the Seder. Don't do it Mirosh Chodesh. Don't do it. Do it when you have time, when the time is designated specifically, cut out for this. And he says specifically, we say, B'shoshesh Matzah Mar Monachim Lefnecha. Why don't we say Pesach? Isn't Matzah Mar and Pesach Menachem Lefanecha? So he points out that even when we had a Korban Pesach, it's only B'shach Sheish Matzah Mar Menachem Lefanecha, because the mitzvah is Kolos HaLayla. Korban Pesach may only be until Chatzos, and the halacha is after Chatzos, Korban Pesach becomes Nosar. And you're not allowed to leave it on the table, because it's Nosar, the person might come to eat it. It's also to eat the Korban Pesach after Chatzos. So, but you shouldn't think that that's when Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim is. It's Kol Zman that you have Matzah Mar Menachem Lefanecha, and that can go, that could technically go all night. Okay, then the Mitchila of the Avodah Zarah paragraph is recorded in the Haggadah, and the Pasuk says, Va'arbe es zaru ve'etein lo es Yitzchak, that Hashem tells the Avram that I'm going to give you a lot of children, and I'm going to give you Yitzchak. What do you mean? Is Yitzchak the lot of children? Yitzchak is one child, right? And ki bi Yitzchak yikari l'chazera. So Va'arbe es zaru is really only one child. There's only one Zera. The only one that's called Zera of Avram is Yitzchak. So he says there's riboy in quantity and there's riboy in quality. Varbe es Zaro. What sort of riboy is your Zera going to be? Etein lo es Yitzchak. It's not going to be the Bnei Keturah. It's not going to be Yishmael. It's not going to be any of those. It's etein lo es Yitzchak. It's going to be a riboy in quantity, in quality, rather than a riboy in quantity. Then we say Baruch Shomer Avtachasal Yisrael. We thank Hashem for keeping His promises to the Jewish people by keeping the Brispin of Sarim that He promised to Avram Avinu. So, what does this have to do with what we just said? The end of the paragraph of Mitchilah of Avodah Zarah, the end of the previous paragraph was that Hashem is going to give Har Seir to Esav and Yaakov Avinu of Yardu Mitzrayim. And then we say, and thank you, Hashem, for keeping the Brispin of Sarim of promising us that we're going to have Avdus and then we're going to have Geula. So he says the smichus ha'inyan, the fact that these two are juxtaposed with each other, is because you're listening to the story of the Jewish people, and you hear about, okay, so I follow the Yaakov line. That's my ancestors. That's where I come from. And what happened to Esav? Oh, Esav, he got his peace. He got Har Seir. What did he have to do for that? Nothing. He just got it. He just got Har Seir. And what do we have? Well, we don't really have anything yet. We sort of are hopeful that we'll have something in the future. And what did we have to do for that hope of a promise of maybe having something in the future, of definitely having something in the future? Well, we had 400 years of Shivut. That's not fair. That doesn't excite me about being a Jew. A person's going to hear that story. Esav just gets Har Seir, and Yaakov gets Yorid L'Mitzrayim, and Esav is just fine, and you know he's Yoshev Levetach, and the Rishonim are Matzliach, and Yaakov and his children, the Tzadikim, they just get Ra after Ra, and Dam, and their blood is spilled, and they have Avodas Perech, and then finally, maybe Eretz Canaan for some time till we're thrown out. So he tells them, no. We right away follow up. There was a bris ben Abisarim, and Avram Avinu signed on for this. And the reason he signed on for this is that part of the deal was that Esav is also Yorish Gehenim. And Avram Avinu was very interested in having this program, this tochnit of Jewish history, work out in this way. That he dafka wanted, that yes, we're going to have to go through the slavery, but we're going to come out of it for rechush gadol. And rechush gadol doesn't just mean money, it can't mean money, because what sort of fool would sign on for that? That just for the money, it's worth it for my children to be slaves for 400 years. No, rechush gadol means that we're going to have the proper midos, we're going to have a proper hashkafa, we're going to have a proper relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a rechush ruchani, and that only was earned through the Korah Barzel of the Tzrayim. That's why we immediately follow up with the bris to say that this is something that Avram signed up for, and he knew exactly what he was signing up for. So we go on to say, part of the bris ben Abisarim was that we were going to be a ger in Eretz Lo Lahem. So Avram, the remez, he says over here, just a quick idea, he says the remez is that anyone who's a child of Avram is always going to feel like they're in an Eretz Lo Lahem. Even when they're in Eretz Yisrael, they're always going to be made to feel like they're in Eretz Lo-Lahem. What was Eretz Yisrael called? Originally Eretz Canaan. What do you mean? It's our land. Why is it called Eretz Canaan? And then what did they call it? Palestine. It's our land. How are they calling it Palestine? Where every, even the old Yerushalmi Yidden living in Eretz Yisrael, and it was always called, and even now he says, after Hakamas HaMedina, but it's, everyone is welcome to live there, and there's, you know, every religion is welcome to live there and give a full citizenship and everything. It's not really our, we never have that feeling of it being our land, and that's part of the fate of the Jewish people, is that until Mashiach comes, it's always going to be, in a certain sense, in Eretz Lo Lahem. And as soon as it becomes ours, people are going to say that it's not really ours, and that we don't deserve it, and that they wanted it, and that's part of just what we have to suffer through, even if it doesn't make sense. And, you know, it's maddening sometimes to look around at the world and say, how do they not see what we see? I don't even understand the other side of the argument, but the other side of the argument comes from an agreement that was made between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Avraham Avinu, that it's always going to be made to feel like an Eretz Lo Lahem until Achras HaYamim, until Mashiach actually comes. So we then say, Tzeil Man Ma Bikesh Lavan Arami Lasos Yaakov Avinu. We start talking about Lavan Arami, Arami Ovid Avi. What does Lavan have to do with Yaakov going to Mitzrayim? The Bris Ben Abisarim was already determined that Avraham Avinu, the children of Avraham Avinu would be in Galus in Eretz Lo Lahem. So he says it could have been that we could have fulfilled that in Aram, that, but it's because Lavan Arami was Bikesh Lakar Sakol, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw to it that we not fulfill the promise of the Bris Ben Abisarim in Aram, and that we dafka go to Mitzrayim, because what Mitzrayim was going to do to us was not going to be as damaging as what Lavan was going to do to us, because Lavan was family, and Lavan was Habanim Banai, they're my children also. So Lavan was going to be oker everything. He was going to be oker any sense of Jewish identity, any sense of associating with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said it would be better for us to go to Mitzrayim. So that we understand. That's why Hashem tells Lavan in a dream, He shamar lecha midaberim Yaakov mitov viadra. Chazal say he couldn't, that tovim shal rishayim is roi hiyetzal tzadikim. That even to speak tov to Yaakov, even to show affection to Yaakov, and to bring Yaakov back in, Lavan wasn't allowed to do that, because doing that would be the undoing of Yaakov. Because Jewish people, he says, by nature, were very forgiving, and if people start speaking nicely to them, even though and speaking nicely to us, even no matter what the history is, no matter what they've done to us, we're always saying, "Oh, okay, they seem sincere," and that's just our nature. We're very kind, and we're very forgiving, and we were going to be forgiving to Lavan, and we would have ended up right back in Aram, and then that would have been the undoing of the Jewish people. So that's why we dafka say that it's because of Lavan that we ended up in Mitzrayim. And then the next paragraph we talk about how we ended up in Mitzrayim. Vayer in Mitzrayim, Vayagar Shamit Lo Yared Yaakov Vinu L'Shtakeh B'Mitzrayim. Yaakov wasn't planning on staying staying there. And part of what Yaakov did, because it was to set up a base Talmud. So how did he set up a base Talmud? The Gemara tells us that he said, well, the Gemara tells us that wherever the Jewish people were from the days of Shem Aver, we always had a yeshiva. We always had yeshivas wherever we went. But Yaakov sent, Lahoros Lefan of Goshen, he sent Yehuda to set up a yeshiva that Yosef would be able to see. So he says two things. Why Yehuda? And why is it Lefanav El Yosef? That it has to be Dafka in front of Yosef, that Yosef has to see this. So he says, first of all, why Yehuda and not, let's say, Levi or Yisachar? He says, because one thing Yehuda and Yosef both have in common is that they're both kings. They're both royalty. Yehuda is the symbol of royalty when the Jewish people are in Eretz Yisrael. Yosef is the symbol of royalty in Galus, of the Jews' success in Galus. Each one might think that the yeshiva is not that important for them. Yehuda might think the Torah is not that important for him because we have Jewish identity. We're in Israel. I'm a melech in Yisrael. And separation of church and state or whatever. So we tell Yaakov tells Yehuda, no separation of church and state for the Jewish people. Yehuda has to be worried about the ruchnius of the Jewish people also. The Jewish government in Eretz Yisrael has to be worried about the ruchnius of Klal Yisrael also, not just the gashmius of Klal Yisrael. And that is part of your job, Yehuda, to set up the yeshiva. And Yosef might have said, well, in Galus, we don't. The Torah is not adaptable to Galus. It's fine when we're al artzeinu, when we're in our land. So he sends Yehuda to set up a yeshiva that Yosef will see, a yeshiva being set up in Galus, as a message to both Yehuda and to Yosef simultaneously. Maybe time for one or two more. We say b'shivim nafesh. We came down to Mitzrayim with 70 souls, and now we're kikoch ve'hashamayim l'rov. And now there were so many Jews. Why do we emphasize the success? This is still the maskil b'gnus part. Right? We're still talking about all the bad things. So why are we emphasizing that we're kakoch ve'ashamayim l'rov? He says, because that's why we couldn't get out. He says, it's just an interesting insight. If when we saw the tides returning, if there were half a dozen families there, or you know, everyone had one or two kids, so we'd slowly leave. We would have gotten out before it turned too bad. But we became so established, and we had such large families, and we had so much going on there, we couldn't get out. We just couldn't leave. It wasn't easy to just pick up and leave. And it was that success that led to our downfall, that led to the fact that we had to suffer for as long as we did in Mitzrayim. Obviously, Rav Zalman Soroskin has a lot more to say, but there's just a taste of some of the things that he has to say about the Seder.